Then the formula goes on, and this is going to be repeated for all of them, so we might as well discuss it now. You remain focused internally on mental qualities in and themselves, or externally, or both internally and externally. Now, what mindfulness were just awareness. How could you be aware of somebody else's sensual desire? How could you be aware of their sloth and drowsiness? You can see the external features on their bodies, but you can't really see the mental act. So, if, however, you remember that mindfulness means keeping something in mind, you remember, okay, everybody else has this. When you're dealing with a five hindrances, this is very useful so that you don't realize, you know, it's come to the thought, well, gee, I'm a miserable meditator, I'm getting nowhere, I might as well just give up. You have to remember, everybody goes through these things, so I'm not especially bad. Other people have been through these things, they have overcome them in the past. This is something that this, they can do it, so can I. I don't know if I've mentioned this story here. When I was a young monk, there was one day when another young monk, we were both newly ordained, used time, of course, not American, went up to meditate at the top of the hill at the monastery. And I was sitting there, and the mosquitoes were biting, and it was hot, and my mind was not settling down. I was feeling pretty miserable about the whole thing. And I looked over at the other monk, he was sitting there very quietly. God, I said, I can't let him beat me. I can't be the weak American. You know, that's how the Thais perceive us. Americans are weak. We live such lives of luxury. At any rate, I found out later he was sitting there, hot, miserable, being bitten by mosquitoes, his mind was not settling down. He looked over, and here was this Western monk sitting there very quietly. I can't let this Westerner beat me. So everybody goes through this stuff, so this is good to remember this. That's what it means about internally and externally, keeping that fact in mind. Any questions on the hindrances in general? We'll be going into these a lot more detail later on, but I just want to give kind of a quick survey. Yes?
I see suffering that comes from, obviously, the ill will, sloth and drowsiness. I get tripped up on sensual desire because it's really hard to see suffering, for instance, and the way my eyes keep going to those beautiful flowers. I don't perceive any suffering. I really don't.
The flowers are not much of a problem. There are other things that are big problems.
Like the new car.
Like the new car, yes. Or the new partner. When you already have a partner, you get a partner. Now we're talking big problems.
That's a big problem.
Yeah, okay. And that's where you've got to work on it. It's like, okay, what would tempt me to suddenly go for that? And you learn to look at it, and it's good to kind of take this apart, because after a while you realize that there's not that much that goes into a perception of somebody's being desirable. And we learn that, you know, that's to say love is blind, they don't, you know, the things that you learn to turn a blind eye to, very soon. And you have to recognize that quality in yourself, and say, look, I've got to watch out for this. And if I know that this, I've got a certain weak point around these things, I've got to learn how to see, okay, this thing that I really go for, you know, what are the disadvantages of it? And then you've got to work on cultivating those perceptions instead.
Or start gardening.
I mean, if you really got, you know, fixated on flowers, that would definitely be a problem. But they're talking mainly about, you know, the things that you keep going, keeps going back to. You've got to see that. The things that are, hopefully the presence of the flowers here is not disturbing your concentration. Yes?
I think the five hindrances in relation to like right effort, right mindfulness, right absorption, that really to take care of the hindrances, that's really right effort. And we have to sort of do that first before we can really practice the mindfulness rather than just going from mindfulness. Does that make sense?
They all go together. You can't practice right effort without being mindful of, okay, what's right and what's wrong. So they all work together. And sometimes you find that you don't even have to think about the hindrances, you sit down and meditate and plunk, you're down. So you don't have to worry about, gee, I've got to search out, do I have any sensual desire, do I have any, no. Is that good or not around right now? Go to work. It's when you find that you said this, you know, it's like lying down, you say, oh my God, I'm lying down on thorns. You got to get up and say, okay, what are the thorns here? That's when you deal with the thorns. So another member, yes?
This is a translation question. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, internally and externally. In other places in the sutras, there's a string of other things. And I know some translations are kind of, you know, shortened and that for us, the Westerners. You're a translator. Is that what it says in the sutra? Does it say all 11 of those, near and far?
No, this is just externally.
It's just that. Okay. Thank you.
And why do they then specify internally and externally after saying internally, externally, and internally and externally?
Okay, well, another way of dealing with this, if you don't think your sensual desire is a big problem, look at somebody else's sensual desire, mm-hmm. the things they do. Mm-hmm. Ooh, this can take me, you know, this can really drive me down. Mm-hmm. Then you compare yourself, okay, where am I on that scale?
Yeah. And that, but then they combine them internally and externally.
Yeah, that's right. That's then you start comparing the two.
Okay. Oh. Okay.
So that you can see, well, I'm actually getting close to a pretty bad situation. It's like, you know, when they talk about people going to AA mm-hmm. by hitting bottom. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if you can see, you know, I may not be hitting bottom yet, but I'm awfully close to somebody who has hit bottom, I better, you know, straighten out my head. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're saying then the internal and external is when you're comparing yourself to external standards like you and the other monk, and you're using it for skillful means.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. And but there are lots of different ways you can use this for the different frames of reference. Like if you're dealing with a pain in your body, you say, well, I don't want to come back as a human being. I'd rather be a deva next time. The devas have, they have pains too. And even the devas that don't have pains, that's going to end at some point. And going, can you imagine, like, you know, like Americans have been living very comfortably, you know, supposed to be society collapsed. We're very, very poorly prepared for dealing with, you know, difficult things. All you have to do is click, you know. You got what you want, right?
So we're looking at the bigger picture.
Looking at the bigger picture, yeah. So in any way that you can, and as you go through these different frames of reference, you'll find that externally and internally get used for different purposes. Okay. So like with the hindrances, it's this kind of thing. Either other people have had these hindrances and they've gotten past them, or I don't see any problem with my hindrance, but I look at somebody else's hindrance and it's pretty easy to see that's, I don't want to go there. Mm-hmm. Like that. You know, the analogy they have the horse. Some horses, all you have to do is say, whip. And they do what they're told. Others, you have to show them the whip. Others, you have to tap them with a whip. Others, you have to go through the skin a little bit. With the worst kind, you have to get it down to the bone. And the Buddha says there are five kinds of students. All they have to hear is, you know, someone else has died. He said, well, I better start practicing. And it's when you're at the bone, you're lying in your deathbed, you know. But don't wait till it hits the bone. The next set is the five clinging aggregates. There's a case where you discern such as form, such as origination, such as disappearance, same with feelings, perceptions, fabrications, and consciousness. But these are not just the aggregates, these are the aggregates with clinging we're talking about. And when the Buddha is talking about origination, again, he's not talking about the fact that these things simply arise and pass away. He says, what is it that causes there to be an experience of form? What is it that causes there to be an experience of feeling? And as we'll find out as we get into this topic tomorrow, it has to do with your passion and delight in these things. So again, it's not just an arising and passing way we're looking for, we're trying to figure out what's causing these things to come. The sixfold internal and external sense media, in other words, eye, ears, time body and mind, and then for the their objects. This is very similar to the hindrances. You discern the eye, you discern form, you discern the fetter that arises dependent on both. So the fetter here again is passion and delight. You discern how there is the arising of an unarisen fetter, you discern how there is the abandoning of a fetter once it has been arisen, and you discern how there is no further appearance in the future of a fetter that has been abandoned. So again, it parallels the five hindrances you see. Okay. When you look at something and desire arises, you notice if it's there. And you don't just go spinning off into fantasies about things. Whoops, there's a desire right now. I've got to do something about this. And if you can see, okay, what do I actually do to get rid of that desire? And then you remember that for the next time around. Fourth framework is the seven factors for awakening. These are the positive ones that you want to develop when you're in meditation. When mindfulness is a factor of awakening is present, you discern. Mindfulness is a factor of awakening is present within me. Okay, this is both this discernment and alertness. Or it's not there, you just discern it's not there. You discern how there is the arising of unarisen mindfulness. As a factor for awakening, you discern how there is the culmination of the development of mindfulness as a factor for awakening. In other words, you don't just watch it come and go. You figure out how do I make it arise, and once it's there, how do I maintain it? This is the opposite of hindrances. And the same formula goes for analysis of qualities, persistence, rapture, serenity, concentration, and equanimity. Analysis of qualities is the wisdom factor here, where you're trying to figure out what's skillful and what's not. Persistence is right effort. Rapture, as we said, is this quality of fullness, refreshment that comes when the mind is concentrated. Serenity is a sense of ease and well-being. Now, you think rapture and serenity would be the same thing, but they're not. Serenity is more calm, cooler. And there actually come points where rapture gets really unpleasant and all you want is the serenity. And the remaining two factors are concentration and equanimity.
Do they go, they don't go in order. Because you can't have rapture and serenity without concentration.
No. Well, you can have them develop and your concentration gets stronger. There are times when they explain them as if they were in order, and other times it's more random. And then the last of these threads of reference is the Four Noble Truths. Now the discussion here is extremely long. I just want to point out two things. One is it's a very long, long, long discussion of the second and the third noble truth, of the clinging and craving. Clinging and craving. Yes, the Lord is a loving shepherd. He's a shoving leopard. And I think one of the reasons why the discussion of craving is so long is because that's what you've got to abandon. And it's basically telling you where do you look for the abandoning of craving. Wherever craving arises, you try to abandon it right there. Mm-hmm. The second point I wanted to point out was just the discussion of suffering. When the Buddha talks about it, you've got aging, illness, birth, death. Not in that order. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, distress, despair. Association with the unbeloved, separation from the beloved, not getting what is wanted. All of which are things that we are very familiar with. And then he says, in short, the five clinging aggregates, and you say, what? And again, this is where we get into this issue of kind of the technical vocabulary for describing a direct experience. We don't have much of vocabulary, but the Buddha wants us to see this. Wherever there's suffering that's weighing down the mind, we're going to look for one of these five activities going on. There's form, feeling, perception, fabrication, and consciousness. The question arises, why would the Buddha focus on those five activities? Four of them are mental activities. And the nearest thing that I can see to an explanation is that they're all involved in a very fundamental process, which is feeding. When you feed on things, you are engaged in these activities. You've got the form of your body. You've got the form of the thing you want to eat. You've got your feeling of hunger, and the feeling of fullness that you want to have come about as a result of the eating. There is the perception that, okay, this is this kind of hunger. This is a hunger for salt. This is a hunger for sugar. This is a hunger for whatever. And then you look outside. Okay, what outside there is edible? What's going to satisfy my hunger? That's perception as you label and identify these things. Fabrication is the process. What do I got to do? If you've got a potato and it's raw, you can't eat a raw potato, so you've got to cook it. Well, how do you cook it? First you've got to find it, then you cook it. That's all fabrication. And then consciousness is your awareness of these things. So what the Buddha is pointing to here is these are activities that we tend to engage in all the time, because as he said, we're not only feeding physically, but the mind is feeding on things as well. And the feeding of the mind also involves feeling and perceptions and fabrications and consciousness. So he's pointing to a very, very basic set of activities. As he talks about what it is that actually constitutes the suffering. So that's the overview of the topics we're going to be covering this weekend.